This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. I'm going to read another essay by Dave Creer. I read some weeks ago a terrific piece by Dave writing about his experience in creating native plant strips that hold erosion and do so much more in our hilly area. Dave grew up on a small farm in Spring Green, just an hour east of Viroqua. After earning a Bachelor of Science in Engineering from the University of Minnesota, he went into the U.S. Air Force. He earned a MBA from Wright State University, and after leaving the Air Force, lived in Sweden for a year while working at Saab Aircraft. He stayed in the aerospace field for over 30 years in marketing, purchasing, program management, and business development, all the while enjoying outdoor activities like camping, canoeing, bicycling, birdwatching, geology, fishing, and gardening. He earned his Minnesota Master Naturalist certification and participated in many citizen science projects. He's also a Wisconsin Master Naturalist instructor and volunteers with the Friends of Vernon County Parks and Forests. He works at Valley Stewardship Network as the Native Plantings Coordinator. He and his wife moved to Viroqua in 2016. And now, David's essay on biodiversity. We were thrilled when we bought our home in Viroqua 7 years ago. Our yard was exactly what you would picture when thinking of a neighborhood built in the 50s through the 70s, a fair amount of grass and a few flowers near the foundation of the house, all of it mostly taken care of and well mowed. There were a lot of trees, mainly silver maple, arborvitae, blue spruce, and black walnut, and many tree stumps indicating there had been many more trees until recently. There were a few hints of wildness, though, and it was exciting in that first year to see what would come up from the winter ground. A steep and rocky hillside bristled with blackberry, ferns, bleeding hearts. There was a very mature grapevine on a small arbor, and a plot in the back corner loaded with comfrey plants. Overall, I knew that we would want native plants to make up much of our yard, and that we wanted to reduce the amount of grass, most of which is non-native, so we wouldn't have to mow as much. Laziness can be a guide for landscaping, too. There are many reasons for migrating to native plants where possible. They are usually quite robust once they're established, as they have evolved to our environment. We enjoy birds, and birds will go where there is food and shelter. And study after study shows that native plants are much better at both than non-natives. When birds have families, the food for raising fledglings consists mainly of high-protein caterpillars and other insects. And to get those insects, we would need native plants. It seems strange, but we really wanted to design our yard to host insects so that those insects can support birds. That's the opposite of what we think we should do if we want to spend time in our yards and not get bit by bugs. But most insects don't bother people, and most probably don't even see or smell or hear us. Of course, mosquitoes do, so don't have standing water. I used to think that a wide variety of insects would eat and propagate on a wide range of plants, but that really isn't so. Most insects specialize in one or just a few plants to get nutrition from, and most importantly, to breed on. The example most people know about is the monarch butterfly, and that it must have milkweed plants to lay its eggs on. No other plant will do. The caterpillars that will emerge from those eggs are especially adapted to eat that milky sap, which is the plant's defense against most other insects. Beyond that, though, the vast majority of insects are tied inextricably closely with just one or two native plants that they have co-evolved with. So without those plants, you don't get those insects. And without a wide range of insects and their larvae and caterpillars, we don't get birds that eat them and need them to raise their broods. That isn't to say many insects don't feed and pollinate and buzz around and fly around and use whatever is available. But to successfully live, breed, and thrive, they need those native plants around. The same is true of shrubs and trees, not just flowers. oaks are far and away the most productive tree available for hosting many types of insects and caterpillars. Back to our yard. While we were remodeling our house, we didn't have a lot of time or energy for the yard, mostly just keeping it mowed. Lessons from previous homes we had lived in told me that if we planted something, it would take 3 years before it really was established and blooming, and I wanted to get some plants in the ground as quickly as possible, even if they weren't exactly where we'd want them in the end. We started by building on the comfrey plot, adding some coneflowers, bee balm, and cut-leaf coneflowers we brought from our last house, which was in a pretty similar temperature zone. Some thrived in this new environment, some didn't. It's not just the temperatures, but the sunlight, the soil composition, sandy versus clay, and the soil moisture level. We don't like to keep fighting the land, so as things struggled, I tried to figure out why and move them to a drier or wetter or sunnier or shadier part of the yard. Sometimes they do great in the new spot. Other times, the climate here just isn't right for them, so we moved on to other natives which would do much better here. To an extreme, it's like trying to grow grass or a maple tree in Phoenix. You can do it, but at great effort and cost. We'd much rather have what works here without a lot of cost and effort. We realized we had some oriental bittersweet, but I saw the birds eating the berries, so I was loath to take it out. But then I was on a bird walk, and one of the bird experts said she'd come and take it out if I wouldn't, and that led me to read up about this plant. It's native to Asia, but terribly invasive here, where the plant doesn't have the soil microbes which keep the plant in check in its native territory. So birds eat the berries, spread the seeds, and it runs amok, smothering out other plants and strangling trees to death as it climbs their trunks. I added a bird feeder and took out the oriental bittersweet. This raises a good point. Some non-native plants are invasive, spreading rapidly and unchecked, dominating their area. With no competitors, they can just go crazy and really smother out native plants. Examples of these are garlic mustard, honeysuckle, the oriental bittersweet, and wild parsnip. Wild parsnip is a horrible plant. If you get its sap on you in the sunlight, it causes terrible burns. It was unknown here 40 years ago when I grew up running around on a farm, and now it's everywhere, on every roadside and creek, and chokes out other plants. Other non-natives aren't as aggressive and just exist without spreading too much or doing too much harm. They're not a positive to supporting native insects and birds, but they're not a negative either, other than taking up space. They just are. An example of this is the ginkgo tree, also from Asia, and used as a tree in city boulevards because it's tolerant to pollution. But it doesn't spread out of control, though it also doesn't support much wildlife. A better solution would be an oak tree. We don't have much street pollution like a city, and oak will support over 350 species of insects with a caterpillar stage versus ginkgos, which only support one. Interestingly, invasiveness goes in the other direction too. One of the best trees around here for beauty, fruit, and supporting caterpillars is our native cherry tree. Unfortunately, it is a dreaded invasive tree in Europe. There is a pathogen in the soil in both places, but the pathogen here is much more aggressive and works to keep the cherry trees healthy but not spreading out of control. The European pathogen is much weaker and can't stop the cherry trees. Just like we do here for our invasive species, they have volunteer cherry tree pulling days to try and slow it down. This experience also got me thinking about another non-native in our yard, a huge honeysuckle. Like the oriental bittersweet, birds seemed to like the berries and hiding in the bushiness it provided, but we bought a small native elderberry bush and planted it right next to the honeysuckle, and I thought I would slowly remove the honeysuckle as the elderberry grew up, so there would always be a bush there. Within 2 years, the native elderberry was as big as the honeysuckle, so I removed the honeysuckle entirely and left the elderberry. Researchers at Ohio State University have shown that despite how it looked, birds actually have a statistically better survival advantage in the native plant. First, the nutrition in our native berries is much higher than the non-native, so their feather strength and coloring is better. Secondly, one reason the honeysuckle is successful and invasive is that it leaves out earlier than our native plants. This lures birds to build nests earlier in the season when no other plants are leafing out, so the early nests are quite obvious to predators. For our yard, we want to lean in to going native for biodiversity, slowly removing non-natives and adding back in where we could with native plants. This helped spread out the costs and eliminated the obstacle of having a completely blank yard. We'd take out a plant, add a plant, take out a bush, add a bush. Our yard now is very different than when we first moved here. From the front, the main difference was we removed some concrete sidewalks that weren't needed, taking out about 175 square feet of hard surface. Not only is it less shoveling in the winter, lazy again, but it adds more permeable area for rainwater to soak in and not run off. As you drive by, though, our yard would not scream, "Conservationist lives here." We like to call our yard a mullet. Business in the front and a bit of a party in the back. In our backyard, we've replaced about 30% of our grass with native flowers and shrubs. We were really fortunate that one of our neighbors had a pretty wildflower area, and to help get it in check, she said we could have whatever we wanted. It was the height of our remodeling, so I took an afternoon, grabbed a bunch of shovels full of native flower root balls, and plopped them into holes I dug in our grass in the backyard. Over a couple of years, the native flowers expanded and filled in, and now we can return the favor. The flowers are so thick and big, I need to dig out hundreds a year just to keep up with them. Phlox, coneflower, cup plant, lupin, yarrow, lemon balm, and sedges are all free for the sharing. The grass we do have is green, but has large areas of mint and creeping charlie and wild strawberries growing in it. In summer, it's startling to see how many lightning bugs, birds, butterflies, and moths fly around our yard. It's stunning in the colors and flowers we get through the season, and the herbaceous smells coming from the mint and bee balm and catmint is delicious. As a bonus, we've taken about an hour off of our mowing each time. Not including migrating birds just passing through, we regularly have about 12 bird species in the winter and 15 to 18 in the summer, all in a city yard. Our yard now acts like a giant sponge for rainwater. Even in dry periods, the ground around the flowers is often moist. Our yard is not classically pretty, with tightly trimmed shrubs and clipped lawn looking like a golf course, but it has a crazy amount of flowers, which are beautiful from April to October, mature native grasses which sway in the breeze, and scent-filled shrubs which feed birds and insects. It's beautiful in a less conventional way. So, other than enjoying birds and lightning bugs and a bunch of flowers, what's so important about biodiversity? Part of it is that we don't know all the interactions between the millions of species around us, so as more and more of the species become extirpated or diminished, at what point do other species in the web suffer and become more unstable? Reports from BirdLife International show that 47% of bird species are in decline worldwide, with 15% vulnerable, threatened, or endangered. I can remember when whippoorwills were a common summer bird call, and now they are uncommon to hear. Bats are in extreme danger due to white nose syndrome, a fungus that causes bats to become active when they're hibernating and burn fat when they can't get enough food, so they die. In just 9 years, Wisconsin has lost over 90% of our bat population. Bats are key pollinators and insect predators, helping farmers with pest control. If entire species can be nearly eliminated in such a few short years, they're even more vulnerable with less diverse insect quantities. A second reason it's important is we get such huge benefit from our diverse world. From those bats, we were able to discover sonar, which was a key aid to helping us win World War II. From just flowering plants, we've gotten 11% of the world's basic and essential medical drugs, according to the World Health Organization, and over 50% of all medicine is from plants, according to the National Center for Biotechnology Information. Have a headache? That aspirin is from willow bark. More severe pain? Morphine comes from poppies. New drugs that treat Alzheimer's, HIV, leukemia, and other cancers are just being discovered and synthesized. What if they had gone extinct or even been severely reduced in nature just 10 years ago, and we wouldn't have these new options? And how many new possibilities are still out there waiting to be discovered? Yet a third motivation is, we just don't know what the future holds. If our climate warms up, cools down, gets wetter, or gets drier, nature has a host of local native plants that will thrive. If we only had a few plants, their odds of being able to flourish in some slightly different environment goes way down. Nobody likes all their eggs in one basket. Ask the folks who invested their retirement savings in Enron. Biodiversity supports resilience in our community, keeping us safer. The final reason we plant native in our yard is that every little bit helps. According to Douglas Tallamy's 2019 book, Nature's Best Hope, America adds 500 square miles of lawn per year, which are biological deserts for insects and so for most native birds. Our lawns use 8 billion gallons of water each year, too. With all that going on against insects and birds, in those areas that we can put in a native plant instead of non-native and not be a bad neighbor with an out-of-control yard, why not? Every tree, shrub, and flower that is native will help our insects and birds and other wildlife while being easier to grow and maintain, increase our resilience in the face of an uncertain future, and looking just as pretty. It seems like a win-win to me. While we've been leaning in to adding native plants to our yard, there are other approaches that folks take, including permaculture, growing plants for food and medicine rather than grass, focusing on shrubs. Native shrubs provide shelter, food, and biodiversity, planting prairie strips on farmland, adding full-scale prairie where you can, doing a total yard makeover. There's lots of ways. All of these support native plants, insects, birds, and help keep invasive species at bay. So whatever works for you, everything helps. If you're interested in any of these ideas, check out the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology, which is wsobirds.org, the book Nature's Best Hope by Douglas Tallamy, and that's spelled T-A-L-L-A-M-Y, Valley Stewardship Network's website, and the Audubon Society. And that's Dave Creer's essay on biodiversity. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you for listening.